Welcome everybody to the August Citizens Climate Lobby call. My name is Mark Reynolds. I'm a member of the Citizen Climate Lobby staff. In the 14 years of this organization, I don't think we have ever had a moment that is as crucial as this one. Senator Whitehouse told us that it was absolutely essential that at this time, constituents were calling their Democratic senators and telling them that they wanted a price on carbon in the reconciliation package. So what did we do? We set a goal to have 10,000 people reach out to senators. That goal was quickly raised because people were exceeding their targets in states to 14,000 and over 21,000 people actually participated. So if you're brand new to Citizens Climate Lobby, we started a campaign on July 19th. It ran from July 19th until August 20th. The original goals, as I said, were 10,000, but then we raised it to 14,000 and ended up with over 21,000 people and with 52,000 actions happening. So between people writing, emailing, calling their senators, over 52,000 actions. We tried some new things with this action. Phone banking and digital ads, however, by far the most impactful work was your outreach to family and friends. For example, as you can see in this chart, after the second email sent nationally on July 28th, the campaign was carried forward mostly by you asking your friends and family to write a letter or make a call. Your work was so effective that nearly half of all the people taking action were not CCL members or supporters. That's remarkable. So all the outreach you did to family and friends, this is the first time all my kids and wife did this. And I suppose it's the same for a lot of you. We're going to ask you to be making the same type of outreach, but it's remarkable how much happened just from people you reached out to. Okay, then let's just look at the dashboard for the action tracker of overall what's been happening in the month of July. So you can see not just the calls, but letters to the editor, chapter meetings, and meetings with potential endorsers. July was a record breaker for CCL with over 34,000 actions taken for the month of July, which is a 123% increase over the biggest month we've ever had, which is last May. So last May was the most actions we ever taken in a month. July was a 123% increase in that. And then finally, during the last 365 days, you have made contact with your legislators 114,000 times. So as I said, I don't think that we've ever had a more important moment for this organization than this one, and you clearly answered the bell. So what's going to happen today? In just a moment, I'll be introducing our speaker. After she makes her opening comments, I think there will be time for some questions and answers. Then we'll go over, we've already pivoted from the Senate to the House campaign. So we'll go over what we're going to be doing. And then there's some other things that I want to feature because it really was a remarkable month. So our guest, Pamela Benson Owens, is the president and CEO of Edge of Your Seat Consulting, Inc., and is currently serving as the acting executive director of Six Square. For over 23 years, Pam has owned Edge of Your Seat Consulting, a unique consulting firm that is dedicated to assisting for-profit, nonprofit, and faith-based entities. The major focus of the Edge of Your Seat Consulting, Inc. is to provide methodologies that help manage perceptions and narratives about complex and challenging issues with courage and strategic passion. She serves on the faculty of the Center of Nonprofit Excellence in Austin Community College, and Pam has also completed coursework at Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary, where she is working on a master's degree in divinity. Pam, we are so thrilled to have you here, and thank you. I know with the family and everything, making yourself available on your Saturday, welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Wow, I was just listening to your comments. Talk about just amazing and meaningful work being done and just beautiful, beautiful collaboration and effort. So I'm already inspired and I haven't even talked. So I have just a little bit of time today and I thought about how do I want to best use my time? And there are a variety of ways I could have. But when I was talking to Mark, I said, hey, you know, I want to just spend some time, especially as we think about how do we continue to community build, collaborate, be intentional and mindful about how we do our work. I wanted to launch into the topic of listening. And so in the little time that I have together with you, I am going to share my screen in hopes that we have no technical issues. Hopefully you can see it. Mark, thumbs up if you can see it. Great. So we're going to talk about listening specifically by way of this concept called constructivist listening. And the only way I can back into this conversation with you today is to be super honest. And so several years ago, as I was in the car with my daughter, Allison, who is now heading to high school, but at the time was in fifth grade, We were having an exchange, and she said to me very boldly, she is pure fire, "Mom, I can't believe you do this stuff as a living. You are a horrible listener." To which I said, "You are absolutely wrong. I'm an excellent listener." And we had this argument. But when I drove off from driving her to fifth grade, I realized, uh-oh, maybe there's something to what she said. And listening is a really important thing that I don't know if we actually think about it. We can pinpoint the time in which we were taught specifically how to listen effectively. Listening is a science, and listening, there's a process. And today we're going to talk specifically about a kind of listening that requires us to be attentive and practice. So as your warm up today, I'm going to ask you, when it comes to listening of any kind, how would you rank yourself? Would you say you're a great listener, a good listener, an average listener, or a poor listener? And whoa, if I ask those that you are commonly in community with, your coworkers, your family, your neighbors, to rank you, what would they say? Would they say you're a great listener, a good listener, an average listener, or a poor listener? Now, don't put anything in the chat or say it out loud. This is private time of reflection. But here's what this continuum says. In this field of listening, in the field of communication, in the field of exchange, there's always this piece around what is real. And you've heard the notion that perception is reality. So really, if you rank yourself as great, you're probably good. If you rank yourself as good, you're probably average. If you rank yourself as average, you are probably poor. If you rank yourself as poor, they only gave me 15 minutes and I will not be able to get all that done today, but I do want you to reflect on it. It is worth giving yourself some time to think about how well do I listen? And then here is the math and the statistics. Right? We spend 80% of our time communicating, 45% of our time listening, 75% of all exchanges and words are ignored, misunderstood, or forgotten. And as adults, we listen actively for about 17 seconds. For me, I think it's 9 because I've tested it. I say all that to you, not in a way to scold, but to say, hey, we have an opportunity and an invitation to think about not only how we show up in the work we do in our communities, but how we listen. And there's a process to listening. There's threshold listening. There's critical listening. There's empathetic listening. But then there's this other thing, and it's the core of where we're going to start today, which is constructivist listening. Well, gosh, Pam, what exactly is that? So glad you asked. There's a lot of textbook definitions, but when it comes down to it, it's this. As the listener, we are just listening. And in a world that is busy and distracted, we've added technology to the construct, we're in a pandemic, things are unknown and there's a lot of flexibility that we have to usher in. The ability to just listen becomes even more challenging. And by way of societal norm, we feel that there is some pacing that requires us to fill silence, to always have a response and a rebuttal, to be able to have a comeback immediately. And folks, it hasn't really served us well. So my invitation to you, and somewhat of a challenge, which I try not to issue challenges when I don't know people well, but I feel like on a Saturday morning we can, I issue a challenge to you to think about how you listen and how often do you listen just to listen. And if you're not doing that, I want to give you a framework around constructivist listening so that you can start. Here's how you do it. Each person has an equal amount of time to talk. You do not interrupt. My daughter would be cracking up if I said that right now. You do not interrupt, give advice, or break in with a personal story. Now, the personal story piece comes from us wanting to be relatable, but oftentimes it diminishes listening. Think about how many times somebody's talking to you. I think about my exchange with Mark, which, by the way, could have gone on for hours the other week. And as Mark was talking about his family and his grandkids, I would go, oh, I understand. Yes. It's not necessarily something that's diminishing, but it removes the opportunity to really listen. We want to be relatable and come back with our own personal story. But the minute we open our mouths, we are not listening effectively. So this is the other piece, that you agree up front that confidentiality is maintained. A lot of times when we're listening, we're already thinking about who else we need to inform. I invite you in to practicing discretion and confidentiality in your listening practice. Why? Because if you leave a space and share a story or an exchange, it is already out of context. Because oftentimes we use different words to describe it. We will inflate or deflate an experience. And so being able to say, I'm not even going to share it, not because it could do anything horrible, but because it says to me that if I'm thinking about who I'm going to share it with, I'm not being a constructivist listener because I'm thinking in a different way. So we don't need to always share it or go outside of that exchange, because when we do that, we're not present. And then this one is really hard, that we don't criticize or complain about others during their time to talk. Constructivist listening says, I'm simply going to listen. I'm not listening to rebut, or boy, this is a big one, or be right. And that is the invitation that I give to you in this space today. I challenge you in this next week to try to do this 3 times. And I want you to do it 1 in the workplace, 1 in your household, and 1 in the community at large. And then after those exchanges, saying, was that great, good, average, or poor? Keeping in mind the scale that I shared with you. And everybody always asks me, well, how do I do that when I already know I disagree with the person? And my answer is carefully, delicately, with self-compassion and a willingness to keep practicing. Constructivist listening. It is my hope that I've shared something with you that is helpful and useful. I'm happy to pause at this time and take any questions or comments. Thank you for starting your listening journey with me today.
Okay, this is great. And I have to share having a kind of similar experience, that I read an article a few years ago that said you should occasionally check in on if you're a good listener, because someone told me once I was a good listener. I just assumed that was the case. I must be a good listener because someone told me I was, right? So then I tried just to observe myself, and I noticed how often I finished other people's sentences. And then I cut people off all the time. And I'm like, maybe there is something to that. This is fascinating, Pamela. Let me open up and see what kind of questions there are in the group so far. Morgan, what are you hearing out there?
Yeah, we have a great question that's really relevant with what we're doing right now. And so Mike asked, how would constructivist listening be applied in a phone banking situation?
Ooh, great question. The same way. In a situation where you are in, you know, when you are specifically trying to disseminate information, right? In that situation, I think sometimes we feel like we have to get all the information out. We have to have all the exchange happen. It's got to be all. But what would it look like if we said, hey, mate, we might have to reconstruct how we do this. And it might take us a few times for us to disseminate information that we need to. versus deciding we have to do it in one clip, right? And so it becomes the same practice with an idea that we might have to reconstruct how we are doing our process to get the information that we think is important out. Because when we build trust in the space of the work that we're doing, we will go further. It might take longer, but we will go further and we will create deeper connection. And at the end of the day, we won't have to be in such a position of persuading and convincing and changing, but more in a position of sharing information and creating space for people to decide what they think. It's very hard, but that is a great question.
Pamela, when you actually can work with groups of people and you're gonna have some time, it's kind of a workshop environment, so you can do exercises with them. What kinds of exercises do you do and how do you work to try and have people see what's actually happening rather than just how they think they're doing?
That self-awareness piece is key. And so I know people don't like it, but we often role play. But before I do that, I have people rank themselves like I asked you to do today. And then I ask them to list out all the people that have said they are good listeners and why. That goes quickly. Right?
Yep.
We try to put it into practice. And then I ask them what they think makes up a good listener. And what do they consider a quality exchange? And oftentimes, if we're honest, a quality exchange means that we've gotten our perspective out and people agree with us, right? And there's some societal norms around that. So when I ask people to really evaluate how they listen, you actually have to remove your ego from it to do it. And I believe that even though we are works in progress, you can move along the scale of being a constructivist listener really, really easily by just deciding, I'm not going to pick up my pen. I'm going to put down my phone and I'm going to be present and I'm going to lean into that discomfort of silence. And so now I test myself on hanging on to silence at least 30 to 40 seconds after somebody said something. It's odd. You're leaning in. They're like, are you going to say anything else? Nope. Just listening. And that's how I practice doing it. Mm-hmm. And that's how I usher it into my classes.
Mm-hmm. So with the practice, I mean, what I was thinking when you were talking about it is, you know, like, you don't just work out once, right? And say, okay, I'm in great shape. And like listening's like that, I think. You know, this is a skill that we can grow. And so, you know, what are some of the other things that you've adopted as a practice or you've recommended people adopt as a practice to continue to grow in this area?
I love that. I say to people about constructivist listening that you're not doing it until you're in a plank, like when you're planking in the gym, y'all know what a plank is, and your arms and legs are shaking and you feel like you might pass out. Then you are probably close. But other tips that I say to people is remove distraction and be honest about if you're not in a space to be able to listen, don't convene a conversation. Right? Add 15 minutes to any exchange you're about to do, right? Remove the urge to fill space and silence and discomfort and pick up the pause and the power of the pause instead of feeling like you have to be reactive. So part of the constructivist listening mantra is you have to be able to be practice being responsive. And responsive is slow and mindful. And being reactive in your response and listening is knee jerk. And usually you realize you shouldn't have said it about four words in. So those are some of the tips that I give to people about how to even start it. And I also tell people to announce it. Hey, I'm going to be working on my listening. And I invite you to give me feedback after this exchange is over.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Wow. Okay. Morgan, what else? I don't want to hog all the time, even though this is a subject that I'm absolutely fascinated with. What else are you seeing in the chat?
Yeah. So we have some questions about whether constructivist listening is synonymous with active listening, and then also finding that balance between listening, but also having a constructive conversation with somebody.
I love that. And so not necessarily synonymous, but close. I stopped using active listening because it ushers to people that they need to be actively doing something beyond listening. So it's just semantics, but close. And so what I would say is I use constructivist listening because I create a, there's a pause within that that's embedded. For whatever reason, our brains cognitively, when we say actively, we fill the space with, I have to actively be doing all these other things. And I need all these tools in order to be able to listen. My screen up to type notes. I have to be nodding my head. Like, we do that in that space. So that's why I use this term specifically. And then the idea of, like, how do I then balance between constructive listening, a constructivist listening, and having a constructive exchange? I say release the mantra and need and norm that in order to have an exchange, you always have to be talking. You don't. You can have a very constructive exchange and not be talking. What does that sound like? Hey, Mark, today I'm going to listen to you, and I'm going to listen to you in a way that I'm probably not going to have a response. And I know that might usher in for you that I'm not listening, but actually I'm practicing listening. And I'd like to follow up with you tomorrow or later today, after I've had some time to process and think intentionally about what you've shared. I know that might feel uncomfortable to you, but I'm really working because of the work we're doing is so important to be more responsive. Are you open to that? That's how you practice it.
Wow. Okay. Morgan, what else out there?
Yeah. So in finding this balance, how can you convey to the other person that you understood what they were actually saying? If you don't want to interrupt them, is there body language that you can practice to show them that you're also listening?
I have worked to suspend body language. I tell everybody in my class to practice the game face, which is something like this. Pam, why? Because if we're honest about human nature, our body language can throw a conversation, right? So if somebody, like, I was listening to the videos as we were signing on, my facial expressions told my story, right? So if I'm mid-communication, I might go hard left based on, Morgan, your face. So I say to people, practice the game face, and then this is the key to that exchange to signal you've heard. Morgan, thank you. I am in receipt of what you've said, and I'd like some time to think about it and get back to you at 3:00 today. Are you open to that? And that's it. I'm in receipt of what you've said. I'm in receipt of what you've shared. I am in receipt of your perspective. Thank you. Hard. I'm a work in progress. Anything I teach, I'm practicing. Bring my child on here, she would rank me differently.
Right, mine too. Yeah, it's such a funny thing because this has been a big emphasis of our organization for 13 years, is the trying to be better listeners. And my ability to give advice on it does not compare to my ability to actually practice it.
Absolutely.
They're very much a work in progress.
Absolutely. It's why people say to me, I don't understand. You sit across from the clan, the dragon of the clan in Huffman, Texas all the time and have exchanges. I do all the time.
Yeah.
I sit in opposing views daily in my life. And my sustaining factor is practicing listening with no other agenda, no ego, and no need to be right in immediate space.
Wow. So that's really, really important to us because we've always strived to be a nonpartisan or bipartisan organization. And we're at a very, very political moment in our country's history. And it's hard to get yourself in a place where people whose views you disagree with, that you can just hear them. But I do believe it is that, knee-jerk reaction of wanting to point out one little thing of why they're off that makes it hard to connect with people. So could you say something just a little bit more about that particular thing? Because that's a moment that we are really interested in is how do you connect, like what you just described there? How do we connect with people whose political views are vastly different than ours?
I love this question. And I have to say to you, though, that I am watching y'all and you are navigating beautifully. Like, truly case study level, y'all are doing it. And in order to sustain it, you have to be willing to continue to create a culture of connection. And so connection isn't always the subject at hand, right? It's why the person across the street from me who has directly different political views than I can go down to the corner and fish together, and this street is in shock about why that is. I chose to create a culture of connection around the things that we could connect on and hold space for the things that we can't. And we go at the rate and pace of trust. And then in that space, over time, we can definitely explore our differences by way of curiosity and wonder. But that has been 4 months of straight listening with no opinion attached. So when you talk about like practicing it, and you give the analogy of like, you don't just work out once and you're in shape. It's about creating muscle memory around, I'm simply listening to understand. It doesn't mean that in my head doesn't flood in. That is ridiculous. It does. But I try to suspend it in space so that I don't miss an opportunity to hear at the core, the cement slab that they've poured, that they're building their house on, what's in there that I can find connection points. And I try to go to every exchange that way. And hey, y'all, it's hard. What you're on right, what you are what's bubbling up right now for your organization is complex. It gets no more complex. And how do we create a situation where it's not an either or? Where can it be a both and we still hold true to our mission? That is that's your intersection every day. We can't look up and not recognize ourselves, but how can we do it by building connection and collaboration and partnership and abundance? How do we do that? Every day. You got to be intentional about that every day.
Great. Morgan, we got time for one more from the field.
Yeah. So how can our meeting leaders and just our volunteers in general, what can they do to keep the meetings that they hold, keep them going while also encouraging listening? And do you have any practical advice for how our volunteers and leaders and their chapters can care for each other and support each other within this movement?
Oh, such a good question. I find that we become unreasonable about what we can get done in a certain amount of time. And so when you're doing planning around meetings and you get to 4 agenda items, I'm going to be like, take 2 off. Spread out the meeting. Think about how you construct it. Does it need to be a meeting with 60 people, or is it 5 meetings with 10 people, right? I always say to groups when you're doing complex work, always have a warm-up question to create connection. So I was in a space where I was doing a topic totally unrelated. We are talking about homelessness. And my warm-up question was, what inspired you in the last 5 days? They're like, we don't have time for this. Oh, you don't have time not to do this. Right? And so think about what can we reasonably do in the time that we're setting. How can we create space by way of rules of engagement? And the way a meeting leader decides what a meeting is going to be is to tell the participants what it's not going to be. This meeting is not designed to do the following, right? And that inadvertently tells you what it will be. And then create some scoping around how we will talk to each other, how we will listen to each other, how we will learn from each other, and what will we come out of this meeting with? And if we don't, what's the backup plan? It's painful. Pam, how do you make that look spontaneous? Plan it to the letter. And then you can be spontaneous.
Wow. Well, thank you so much. I have to echo your remarks. When we had our briefing call a few weeks ago, I thought this is a person I could spend a lot of time hanging out with, speaking, talking about things, and was really looking forward to having you on today. And this was very, very useful for the organization and for me personally. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Y'all have an amazing day.
All right. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Woo. Okay. Well, let's talk about what we're doing this month. So what we're doing is on Tuesday, we pivoted from the Senate campaign to the House campaign. So we're going to have the same focus, the same emphasis with the members of the Democratic members of the House. We're going to be asking them to ask for a price to be part of the reconciliation package. That for Republicans, it's going to be about talking about the carbon border adjustment. And again, please play big again. What happened last time with the Senate campaign is this: each state set a target for this state, and almost all of those were hit. In this case, it's your chapter. What can you do to play big with your chapter? What can you do to swing out? What about the people who you reached out for the Senate campaign? Should you reach out to them for the House campaign? Yes, start with them. Those people know how easy it is. I think one of the things, once people realize how completely easy this is, it makes it a lot easier to step out and ask more people to do it, because it's not hard, it's not complicated, it doesn't take a ton of time, and it's really important right now. So our national action director is Dr. Todd Elvins. And Todd, what else should people be aware of about this action? And let's talk about the endorsers after that.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. So on the House campaign landing page, be sure to scroll down and look for more ways to help, where there are three actions to take after you've emailed and called your representative yourself. First, get five more people to email and call their representative and ask them to let you know when they did it so that you can count it toward your personal goal. Next, email and call your senators if you didn't already do that during the Senate campaign. And finally, click one or more of the social share buttons to post it on your social media about the House campaign. So talking about endorsements for just a minute, on July 27th, CCL headquarters sent an email to the thousands of individuals and organizations that have endorsed a climate policy for CCL at some point in the last 6 or 7 years. Now is the time for volunteers who secured those endorsements to reconnect with their endorsers to first ensure that they received and opened the email. Next, ask them to personally contact their senators and representative right away, identifying themselves as a community leader when they do. And finally, ask them to enlist a colleague to do the same. So what about community leaders who have not yet endorsed? Everyone watching probably knows a community leader, for example, a local elected official, a corporate executive, a faith leader, or someone else. During our campaign, please talk to a community leader you know and ask them to personally contact their senators and representative right away, identifying themselves as a community leader and making the asks on the campaign landing page. Back to you, Mark.
Great. Awesome. Dr. Elvins. So Todd is the person that works with all of our action teams. He's the one that coordinates what we're going to be doing every month. And you would never know that he had a PhD, because actually there's quite a few PhDs on the staff, but they believe that they should always lead with their results, not their credentials, to get their credibility. And Todd's being one of those ones who makes an enormous amount of stuff happen for our organization. Thank you, Todd. Great to have you on the call this morning. Okay, so what are some of the other interesting things that happened since last month's call? Well, regarding the Senate campaign, obviously there's some Senate offices that are of particular interest for us. So in West Virginia, Senator Manchin, we got 114% of our goal with Senator Manchin. That's a big deal. Congratulations to our great West Virginia team for making that happen. Same thing with Arizona. A lot of attention on Senator Sinema. Senator Sinema in Arizona reached 140% of its goal. In Utah, Senator Romney, again, a lot of attention, 132%. Regarding Democratic senators, which is where Senator Whitehouse told us to have our focus, 48 of 50 Democratic senators achieved 100% or more of their targeted number of contacts. So that's great. It's continuing to go on, and fantastic work so far. You know, as I said, this is the first time that my wife and my kids did everything. I might have helped my wife a little bit, but please keep reaching out to everybody. And most importantly, ask them to continue to reach out. Also, we did phone banking, and some of you got a chance to participate that and find out that it was a blast. That was coordinated by Tony Cerna, and Debbie Chang proved again to be a complete rock star with it. So we will be doing phone banking. If that sounds like that might be fun, there were some places you could see the video before we started and on CCL Community where you can see how you could phone bank. We did targeted messaging to particular states. It's the first time we did focused digital ads, and I think that also helped. And then Bill Barron, our Mountain West coordinator, wanted to just help Arizona and New Mexico get over the top. So he went down and actually clipboarded. He got another volunteer and he stood outside and he asked people if they're concerned about climate change. If they were, he showed them how they could take action right there. If they weren't, they just moved on. So when Bill was in Arizona, in the 3 days he was there, we went from 57 to 97% of our goal in Arizona. When he went over to New Mexico, we went over in 4 days from 87% to 161%. So given all the focus of what was happening in the Senate, does that mean we dropped the ball on everything else? Nope, not CCL. So some of the cities that endorsed the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act included Boston, Huntington Beach, and Santa Barbara. So you continue to get endorsements from major cities. And that was on the energy innovation. That wasn't just on the concept. That was on the actual legislation. What about getting published? You know, there's not the number of newspaper spaces there used to be. There's not the number of papers that publish every day. So there's not the opportunity that there used to be to knock out 300 letters every month. But we got 269 letters published in July. That's a big month in the current world that we're working in. And an additional 65 op-eds. Also, social media. During the last 2 months, we did triple and 10 times the total amount of social media activity for the previous year. This is just directed at members of Congress. So this isn't everything we did on social media, but for those of you who tweeted or send some social media message to your member of Congress, in the last 2 months, we tripled and did 10 times the amount for the entire year last year. So it's nice to see the organization, so many more people embracing social media and using that. It also looks like that you had an impact on the IPCC scientists. This is something I've been hoping for a long time. So I know most of you probably saw the report that just came out. The report's brutal, but it's also been really interesting seeing the report authors' comments saying, hey, we got time, we can do this. And it's nice to hear the scientists being encouraging about being in action. That's not what we've often heard from them. So it was nice to see the IPCC reports. I'm going to show you a video of our youth action team in just a moment doing this, but I also wanted you to know that last month we added thousands of new supporters. It's been very hard to do outreach and create growth over the last 18 months, but actually last month you added thousands of supporters. So thank you all for doing outreach on that. And we'll end by sharing with you our youth action team's minute and a half video of how they participated in the Senate campaign.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hola.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm a constituent and a voter, and climate change is a priority issue for me.
Hi, my name is Nadia. I live in Falls Church. I'm really worried about climate change.
We will be calling to let them know we want a price on carbon emissions.
I think we should pay attention to our climate more. And I'm calling to ask you to include carbon pricing in the reconciliation package.
Soy electora y votante, y el cambio climático es un tema prioritario para mí.
It would be huge for America as we would be leading the world in climate.
I'm calling because climate change is a huge priority for me, especially concerning my future.
This is a page you're going to be looking at. And this is the suggested script.
When I actually made the call, it was so easy, it surprised me.
I was a little nervous, but I ended up not needing to be nervous.
I've done some calls before, so I wasn't crazy nervous. But it's always super fun.
Probably it only took me 30 seconds.
I'm very proud that I actually took action.
If like a kid calls you and says like, please do this, please, then it's hard to say no.
I feel great knowing that I have contributed.
Yeah, it feels like I made a difference.
Do it. It's not hard.
All right, thanks everybody. Next month, our speaker will be on the border carbon adjustment. Thanks for all you're doing. Let's go get it in the House like we did in the Senate, everybody. Bye now.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.